let's move on to conservatism. And in this case, a particular brand of conservatism when we look at international adventures.
Well, neoconservatism is sort of an interesting mixture of other views. But basically, what neocons are distinct from other sorts of theories of international relations is that neoconservatives believe that the domestic politics and domestic regime type of countries really matter. That crudely put, that neoconservatives in some ways are the extreme version of liberals in that they actually agree that the world is much, much, much safer if it's all democratic, that autocracies and authoritarian states are truly pernicious elements of world politics, that they don't comply with international treaties, and they subjugate their own populations and so on and so forth. So what neocons argue is that by and large the world is safer if the more powerful actors out there are democracies. And in contrast to realists, for example, realists generally believe in the balance of power. They believe that states will balance against the greatest threat. Neocons generally assume that bandwagoning goes on, that in some ways they actually agree with Osama bin Laden that states are more likely to back the strong horse rather than the weak horse. So you therefore want an extremely powerful democratic hegemon, and that's the best way you can promote world order. And that, you know, but whereas neocons do agree with realists, is that they're both skeptical of international institutions. Neoconservatives generally believe that international institutions are the weapons of the weak and the cynical and the autocratic, and they're designed to really constrain democracies. That authoritarian states will say they will adhere to international norms but not actually do so, whereas democracies, because they respect the rule of law, will do so, and as a result, this hampers them tremendously.
So do we believe then that a neoconservative regime would be much more proactive than a liberal regime? They would be more inclined to try to stop the zombie threat in a foreign country, even without, say, you know, some
UN
sort of
permission, for example.
UN permission, some sort of protocol that gave them the right to go in and eradicate, just on the basis of you are a threat to us, you are not handling your zombie problem, we're going to come in and solve it for you, you'll thank us later, but right now we're not giving you a choice. Do we think that's what would be the neoconservative position?
Neoconservatives credit that they would recognize very early on that zombies represent an existential threat to humanity, that zombies would hate humans for our freedoms, namely our freedom not to eat other people's brains. And so as a result, neocons would be much more likely to recommend an aggressive militarized response, regardless of what international and multilateral institutions would suggest, and try to take the fight to the zombies.
Libya is kind of an interesting example right now. What exactly is our, what are we using as our right to go in and bomb a sovereign nation? It's a little murky, except it all seems to fall into the category of a greater good.
Well, I think the difference is that the neoconservatives would have never waited for the UN Security Council to authorize the invasion, and I don't think they would have been terribly keen on relying on NATO to oversee the airstrikes. I think that the neocon response would be, you're either with us or against us, and they would want to take the fight to the zombies with the hope that, a massive, exercise in both air power, reliance on local allies and maybe special forces would literally shock and awe the undead into extinction. The problem, as I said in the book, is that it is highly unlikely that the neocons would stop with the zombies. They would obviously assume that the zombies would be getting help from the rest of democracy's enemies. So they would posit the existence of an axis of evil dead in which the zombies clearly had to be thought of as allies of, other authoritarian states such as China or Russia or Iran. And as a result, neocons would probably be willing to, expand the fight to address not just the zombies but also – any state which was thought to be even mildly friendly to the zombies would be thought of as an ally of the zombies, and therefore it would encourage a much wider conflict. And this would obviously undercut coalition warfare somewhat, so they would potentially compromise military integrity. And, of course, the other problem is, and we know this from World War Z, is that you really can't shock and awe zombies. They don't feel fear. So I'm a little worried that the sort of military tactics that neoconservatives would recommend would work all that well when dealing with flesh-eating ghouls.
Yeah, because as you point out, what if the enemy can't be shocked and awed, not just won't, but biologically can't be shocked and awed? And yet your point is taken then. A war against zombies would be a war against evil itself. It is sort of the ultimate rallying point for people of faith, for even for people who never thought about some sort of holy war. You would see this as a war against the unholy, and it might be a terrific way to bring a coalition together that, you know, that we might not have seen in 60 years in this country.
That's absolutely true. However, again, the question becomes whether or not the neoconservatives, you know, in their aggression would actually undercut the sort of unity that you would expect both domestically and internationally to take the fight against the undead. So, for example, one obvious response that you might see, and I talk about this a little bit in the book, is that, you know, just as surely as you would see the creation of a global counter-zombie regime, you would also inevitably see the creation of global civil society movements that would protest the sort of treatment of the undead, that would promote the spread of undead rights. You know, you could see groups like Zombies Without Borders, a Zombie Rights Watch, People for the Ethical Treatment of Zombies, all of which would demand, you know, that the undead would have certain kinds of rights that would have to be respected. And this would inevitably hamper or impair, you know, the effectiveness of any kind of global counter-zombie regime.
Well, but I think it's a fair question, is who are we to decide when somebody's rights as a human being has ended? And we don't have it written into our Constitution. It might require an amendment that says your rights as a human being are terminated with your last breath.
There's no question that the zombies raise profound and serious legal questions, both in the domestic and the international level. And, you know, to be fair, it is also possible, you know, you're assuming that zombies are an implacable enemy, but maybe it's the case that you could actually, you know, you could, there, the peaceful coexistence could be possible between humans and zombies. It's not clear. It might be the case that, in fact, if you were to engage in, you know, significant abuses of zombies, that would merely enrage the other zombies even further. And that's something you have to consider.